Baseball Tonight is presented by LinkedIn Jobs.
Way out of here.
Oh, this is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, April 13th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster, only working from my studio, home studio in New York. Yesterday, we saw postponements in the aftermath of the police shooting of Dante Wright, a 20-year-old black man in the Minneapolis suburb of Brooklyn Center during a traffic stop. The Nets, Wolves, Blues Wild, and the Red Sox and Twins were postponed in the wake of that shooting. Makeup date for the Red Sox and Twins game was not immediately announced. And in the aftermath of that, the Yankees' Aaron Hicks, who of course played for years with the Minnesota Twins, came up in that organization, took himself out of the lineup. Yankees manager Aaron Boone told reporters about Hicks. He's having a tough time right now. Los Angeles Angels third baseman Anthony Rendon was placed on the 10-day injured list because of a groin injury. Then Washington Nationals, who of course had all those players who had to be sidelined because of COVID-related issues, had a bunch of players return yesterday. Kyle Schwarber, Josh Bell, Josh Harrison, all back on their roster. Texas Rangers pitcher Jonathan Hernandez underwent ligament reconstruction surgery. It's been a tough year for the Rangers when it comes to injuries. Let's get to the good stuff. Ronald Acuña Jr. is really showing the full breadth of all of his talents this year. This was Ronald Acuña Jr. last night, hustling all the way to third base on a triple and then scoring on a pop-up to just behind second base.
And a line drive headed for the right field corner. That's down for a hit. Long run, Duvall. He'll track it into the corner. Acuña eyes one second. Ball dies at the pole. Ronald around second. Here's the run into third. He belly flops in with a leadoff triple.
1-0 pitch. Ozzie skies that one into the shift right at the shortstop.
You don't see it.
And he couldn't find it. Look at Chisholm backtrack. Acuna's going to tag. He's coming home. He's going to make it.
Yeah, he really put on a show. That, of course, was the voice of the great Chip Carey on the Braves television network. Speaking of guys breaking out, Tyler Glasnow was unbelievable against the Rangers yesterday.
And a cut and a miss right up there, 98. And a swing and a miss. And I'll tell you, that is not fair.
That was Dwayne Statz on the Rays television network. Glasnow allowed only two hits and struck out 14 over 7 2/3 innings in that start against the Rangers. We're going to talk about him. We're going to talk about Ronald Acuña Jr. and others coming up when we speak with Jessica Mendoza. Mike Trout had a moment.
And Trout gets a hold of one into the corner and left. And he got it! Homers in 10 straight. Two-run shot for Trout.
I recognize that voice. That's Matt Biskirchen, my partner on Sunday Night Baseball, who's doing some Angels games this year. Trout is going crazy. I've got a really interesting statistic about where he stands historically. And the Padres and the Pirates played yesterday. Will Myers put on a show.
1-0. Pitch to Myers. Hit well at the straightaway center field and deep. Going back, Fowler. Looking up. Gonna go. Into the topiary at PNC Park. Will Myers, an RBI single in the first. Now a two-run homer in the sixth. His third of the season. And the Padres take a 3-1 lead.
My, oh, my.
That's right. That from 97.3, the fan, the Padres win again. They have a staff ERA below two. They're as good as we thought they were going to be. That's for sure. Now, before we get to Jess Mendoza and to Sarah Langs, baseball is back. And so are your favorite teams and players. Catch the best of the bigs all season on ESPN Plus with more than 170 live MLB games featuring every star and every team in the league. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/baseball and get ready for the NFL draft with ESPN's radio coverage with Keyshawn, Jay Will, and Zubin. Weekdays from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPN2. Getting insights from former number one pick Keyshawn Johnson, along with co-host Jay Williams and Zubin Mehente. And listen to the show wherever you get your podcasts.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Jess Mendoza is an analyst on ESPN baseball broadcasts. And Jess, what game you have tonight?
I've got the Reds at the Giants in San Francisco. And it's one of those where you get lucky, where it matches up, where the two aces, Luis Castillo for the Reds, Kevin Gausman for the Giants. So, I mean, you know me, I get all nerdy with the pitching stuff, even though I love hitting and diving into that. But when you get two guys that have some good swing and miss stuff, things you can point out, entertain, you know, if it's working, if it's not, you know, all the different things, it's a fun matchup. So I'm looking forward to that.
I think Kevin Gausman might be the closest thing that baseball has right now to Charlie Morton 5 or 6 years ago. You know what I mean? Where
yeah.
This guy has unbelievable stuff. He was a high draft pick. Everyone sees the potential there. And it really is, it feels like he's about ready to put it together. And I've always thought he's one of my favorite people in the game, as being someone, he's such a nice person that I almost feel like he wasn't able early in his career to like shut off the information. Like
yeah.
He would have 20 people giving advice and he'd try to utilize all 20 voices. And now that I think he's gotten older, he's sorted through that.
Absolutely. And, you know, just being able to trust, like there's just such a comfort there. I spoke with him yesterday and, you know, you're right. It's something that really started to come together last year. And I think too, there's a real difference when you, within an organization, I'm not knocking Baltimore, but when it just syncs up with the player. So it's not that one organization is better than the other. But in San Francisco particularly, and actually his brief time with Cincinnati when he was throwing out of the bullpen is what really switched for him, because it's a mindset for a lot of these guys that they've been groomed and talked about. And I mean, you just look at him and he's the prototype, you know, tall, lean, throws 98, like he's got all the right pitches. But all of a sudden he was thrown into the bullpen in Cincinnati and it just shifted his entire mindset of like, I might only face a couple batters here. So if I only have that time, first of all, I'm going to rear back, throw the ball as hard as we can, which is what we see from bullpen arms. But also I'm going to make sure that I am deciding what pitches I throw and not just saying yes for whatever's being thrown down. Like if I've only got a chance here to prove myself instead of possibly an entire game, I'm going to make some changes. And so that mindset shift. And when he got to San Francisco, that's exactly what Farhan Zaidi told him, was like, hey, I don't want you to change a thing of what you do out of the bullpen. When you were throwing out of the bullpen, that's what we want. So if you throw as hard as you can, whatever you want to pitch, that's what you're going to do. And it's completely shifted now the way that he's been able to perform.
And Jesse, the Giants have gotten off to a good start, but I believe at some point the standings will settle out as we would expect. The Dodgers are going to run away with the West. The Padres are a really good team and the Giants have become sellers. And I think Gausman might be, by the time we get to mid-July, the number one trade asset available in the market to all these contenders looking for a starting pitcher. What do you think?
Absolutely. Yes, that's exactly. I mean, I think it was the best qualifying offer. The whole thing worked for both sides last year. Kevin, you know, receiving the qualifying offer, accepting it, coming back for $17 million this year and being able, you know, to kind of put another year to show people, especially in a non-pandemic, like in the middle of it last year when he would have been a free agent, to be able to come back this year and show that 2020 was not a fluke for him because he had so much success and everyone's now watching over 162. But then to get on a contending team, because you know that that's exactly the Giants. They're like, hey, let's have him back. Obviously, they want to hope that they'll contend, you know, here in the next few years. They're in that rebuilding mode, and to be able to get a couple really cool, whether it's prospects or key guys back from a team, is exactly what the Giants need because they're close. They're not there yet, but they're right there in the middle where they're not the worst team in the division. And they're starting to really build on these trading blocks, these building blocks, the different things they're able to do. So yeah, Gausman being able to go away, saying that, but trade away in July and get some good. It's exactly what the Giants want.
And if he has a big year, he is going to kill it in free agency. He's going to be one of the most coveted arms in free agency in the fall as well. So fingers crossed for Kevin Gausman, a great guy. Yesterday, of course, the Red Sox and Twins were postponed in the aftermath of the police shooting in the Minnesota area. And, you know, we saw this last year. And Jess, I thought back as I was preparing to talk to you today, where I remember how, you know, years ago, decades ago, when I first started covering baseball, the culture of the sport was that when a player was going to have a baby, he was not going to leave the team. Like for years, that's the way it was. Oh, you're having a child? Tough. You know what? The baseball schedule is more important than anything else. And then over time, I think people realized, well, that's really stupid. And so yesterday, when Aaron Hicks went to the Yankees and said, after what happened in Minnesota, I don't want to play. And Aaron Boone told reporters, you know what? He's having a tough day today. I think that's exactly the right thing within baseball, just as it is with other companies. Listen to your employees, understand what they're experiencing, understand what they're going through, and react with compassion. What do you think?
Yes. I mean, that's the human part of the sport that needs to be out there. I mean, yes, if you're a brand new father, I mean, hello, I'm super biased, but it's like, of course, baseball is not more important. Like, this is your life. And for Aaron Hicks, and I credit Aaron Boone so much as well, because it came from him, you know, and if this was, you know, even a few years ago, it could have come from the player because the manager might not have stood by him or maybe support him and like, all right, but you need to address this and go and tell everyone, because his name was already written into the lineup, which I felt like was even more impactful for just people understanding how this can hit somebody. And anyone who knows Aaron Hicks understands that this is not a player that ever would want to sit out, that he wants to be in that lineup if you're talking about the baseball side. But the personal side, you know, I sat there and even hearing that, you know, Giancarlo Stanton was mulling it over himself, and you know, the fact that he was like, look, my whole entire mind can't be in this because I'm hurting. I'm hurting for what I feel that is happening right now in our country and back in Minnesota. And that honesty, one, is so huge, but then also the support system of his teammates, of his manager, and the fact that this also can be something that other people can share with him, that it's public because he was in the lineup. So it's the Yankees and, you know, everyone was following that story, and it lets people understand that this isn't just one part of our country, but it affects our athletes. It affects every single one of us.
100%. And I'm glad that the sports culture is evolving in handling situations like that, because I can imagine if you'd had a player say, when I first started covering baseball, say, you know what, this tragedy happened and I don't feel like I'm in the right mindset to play. Boy, there would have been a lot of repercussions on that individual player. And now instead, there's a better sense of understanding. So on Sunday night, the deciding run in that game we had between the Phillies and the Braves was scored on a play in which Alec Boehm of the Phillies, in my opinion, never touched home plate. And I don't even think it's an opinion, Jess. I think any replay you look at shows that Alec Boehm to this moment has not touched home plate, which is why yesterday, and that was the play was reviewed in Chelsea, and the decision was that there was no evidence that he didn't touch home plate, which I found to be nonsensical. And so yesterday I was really hoping that Major League Baseball would come out with a statement and say, you know what, that decision last night, that was wrong. And we got that wrong, and we're going to do better going forward. We've seen other sports do this. I think baseball would really benefit from doing this to bolster the credibility of the whole system in the eyes of the players, as opposed to, it feels like, almost telling the players, you know, nope, what we're telling you is this is what we saw. You know, what you guys are saying you didn't see, no, that actually happened. That's absurd.
Yeah, well, and then the reverse. If there was something magical that they saw, like an extension of a foot that wasn't there or something, then like to be able to come out and say, finally, if they're standing by, hey, there's no evidence, or that, hey, we did see him, then come forward with that. But have some sort of, I mean, this was the biggest story, you know, coming into Monday. You know, we had our first little league practice with a bunch of 7 and 8 year olds, and literally all the kids were like doing their best Alec Boehm. Like, so you just kind of do, they were all like sliding on the grass and imitating how you don't actually have to touch the bat. It was cracking me up. And I was also super happy. I'm like, yes, everyone's watching baseball again and like imitating what they saw the night before. But then it was also embarrassing because I'm like, you know, and that would have happened before replay, right? Where it's like, oh, like we could see because we, as people watching from home, had the benefit of replay, right? That the umpires did not have. And so it's like, dang, you know, he was really actually, you know, out, but, you know, they called him safe, whatever. But then it's like, no, they spent 5 minutes seeing exactly what we saw. And like you would tell an 8 year old, if you're wrong, be accountable. And that will go, this is like me in like parent mode where it's like, just own up. Things will be so much smoother down the road if you can just admit fault. Just say, you know what? It's our bad. You know, this is what we thought. We were under a time, whatever the reason was. And you know what? You make mistakes. Like, I get that. And this one was a hard one to swallow, but owning up to it is going to allow everybody to move forward so much easier instead of it just kind of lingering, especially Buster. My biggest fear is these two teams are going to be battling it all season long, and it's not going to go away. Like, it's all going to come back to that game. Imagine, you know, I mean, I doubt like obviously a tie by the end of the year, but definitely I feel like it's going to come down even as we're heading into September, where those two teams are still battling it out for the division, and every game will matter. We'll look back to that slide that wasn't a safe call.
And last night I was watching the Marlins and the Braves, and there was a replay challenge by the Braves on a slide into second base, and it went against the Marlins. And I don't know exactly what folks in the Marlins dugout were thinking, but I strongly suspect some of them were like, oh, I know how this is going to go. Major League Baseball is going to rule in favor of the Braves because they know that they screwed up last night. And the replay went against the Marlins, and Don Mattingly lost his mind. Like, he was like, are you kidding me? Because it was, again, another play where you're not sure exactly what was being seen back in the replay center. I wish they would have someone with a microphone back in Chelsea to let people know exactly what's going on and to own whatever decisions they make. All right. As usual, I wound up taking too much time.
No, it's you and I. We just get chatting. We're like getting coffee in the morning, and it's go time.
And I'm like on my third cup already. So I'm going to ask you for 45 seconds on these players who are seeing progress in this year. Ronald Acuña Jr., who's just been putting on a show in recent days.
We can talk about, you know, the power, all of the things that are sexy. But to me, getting down the first baseline to help create that rally that we saw on Sunday, I mean, flying. And he hit the ball pretty hard to shortstop. It wasn't some weak ground ball that he beat out running down to first. I mean, he was just getting after it. And I love when you're showing off all the skills, you know, and right now it's like, you can just see that he's grown up. I mean, that's what's so crazy with some of these players is like, he's still getting better because he's still growing up, and he's not even at his prime years yet. If you really think about, you know, your late 20s and how much you can learn from the game. So yes, putting on a show, but to me it's the little things. As soon as you hit a ground ball that you think is going to be out and you're getting down the line to create a rally for your team, that's the stuff I love.
And last night, scoring on a pop-up behind second base, tagging from third base where just after he hits a triple, and getting an RBI from Ozzie Albies. As they said on the Braves broadcast, Ozzie owes him a steak for getting an RBI on that type of play. Tyler Glasnow, who you and I met when he was really young with the Pirates, incredibly fun guy. And it's fun to watch him put it all together.
It really is such a great guy. Yeah, you and I had spent some time with him. He was so, so sweet, so nervous, all the things. It's still insecure too. I remember talking to him and he still had doubt. You know, you could tell that, like, you know, I hope I do well tomorrow night. You know, it's on Sunday Night Baseball. Like, just that like child that was still in him, but that want to be great and to see him put it all together. Another guy, you know, similar to Gausman in the sense that, you know, has all the tools and was just lacking that ability to kind of get his body in sync. To really, you know, because he is that, like that mold to, you know, power all the things that you can see, the potential there, and to see him do it in Tampa Bay, and the performance he had last night, the swing and miss, everything working for him. And then that smile, it was pretty cool.
Will Myers off to a great start with the Padres after having a great 2020. This is someone that the Padres actually were dangling around in trade talks because they wanted to dump his contract.
I mean, this is in a player that stepped up in the, you know, the injury of Tatis Jr., you know, just having another tool and someone else that within that lineup just to show how deep this team can be when everybody is doing well. And when he, I remember when he first came up and just all the expectation and, you know, the one of those like slumps after he had had so much success. So Will Myers is someone that can just continue to add to a Padres team that is so already stacked.
Then Mike Trout guy, I don't know if you've heard much about him. Another home run last night. He now has 306 at the outset of his age 29 season. I was just thinking about him this morning and how consistent he is. And I was thinking about the most consistent player in baseball history. And that would have been Henry Aaron, who his age 29 season had 342 home runs. That's all the way through the season. Trout's at the beginning of the age 29 season, 306. If you told me Trout would finish his career somewhere in the 715 range, and Aaron finished his career with 755, that would not surprise me. What about you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just see him even as he ages, which he's nowhere near that now, but even at the back end of his career, just being the guy that's just able to put the ball like over the fence with ease. Like, you know, maybe not running the bases as fast, maybe not roaming center field, maybe he's more of a DA, whatever it looks like the last few years of his career, he's still going to be able to barrel up balls. I mean, that is something that he, when you're looking at just how to hit the ball, like so well, short, like to the ball, all the things, you know, that's Mike Trout. And you see that in the back of his career because it isn't this big, long, huge, like powerful swing. It's simple. And his direct line from just bat to ball, it's such a like easy move for him that it's just, you can see this continue well until I see him like, you know, 40 years old and just like, boom, center field, home run, left field, home run. Like it's chip shots and golf.
And last one, the Cubs offense. What the heck happened with this group of players? Through the first 10 games in this season, they have 49 hits. It's the fewest through the first 10 games of a season in franchise history, a 164 batting average. I remember, Jess, last year when they struggled, you know, David Ross, their new manager, said, look, 60-game season, no one's really paying attention to the results because it's a small sample size. This is not a small sample size now. This has been going on for a while.
No, it has. And especially ever since they won, just because they are good. And like, but at the same time, it's amazing. I don't know if it's just mental, if it's pressing, if now this year coming in, but like you said, it's been the last few years where they're just not the living up to the potential of what we saw when they were all, you know, winning games left and right and then ultimately winning the entire thing. But I think, you know, this year, and you and I talked about it, everyone's talked about it, is, you know, they're talking about selling this team, you know, getting rid of a lot of these big stars because they have to rebuild. And if they're not going to be in contention, and I think that just adds further pressure because this team wants to stay together and they want to be the guy to say, no, I want to stay in the Cubs uniform. Don't trade me away. And I feel that sense from them that it's like, they know that they're better than this, but then you try to be the guy to show that you're better. And that's not how when they were working, it was literally, you know, a different hero every night. And now you just feel the Chris Bryant's, that Anthony Rizzo's. I mean, Javier Baez had that throw yesterday. He jumped all the way into the stands and they laughed about it, but it's just, it was almost like, wow, this team, like what has happened to this team?
100%. All right, Jess, I'll be watching tonight. Have fun. I'll be texting you.
All right. Thanks for the coffee.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, of course, a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, I was just talking with Jess Mendoza about Mike Trout and the current trajectory he's on and the similarities to Henry Aaron. You know, through Henry Aaron's age 29 season, in an incredible career of consistency, he had 342 homers. We're at the outset of Mike Trout's age 29 season, and he's got 306 homers. If you told me at the end of his career that he would be in that 715 home run range, it wouldn't shock me. What about you?
Absolutely. I mean, consistency is the word. You know, he had, you know, injury in that 2017 season. That's when he played 114 games. But other than that, he's pretty much always been in that 130 plus game range. And we saw, I mean, all of those MVP finishes, right? He finished fifth last year, and that was his worst ever in a full season. I mean, I think that tells you all you need to know about, you know, you're not getting those MVP votes if you're injured, and you're not getting those MVP votes if you're playing in 40 games in a season. And he just doesn't seem to be slowing down. I mean, he's one of three guys who's 90th percentile or better in hard hit rate and sprint speed right now. And the other guys are guys like Ronald Acuna Jr., who are significantly younger. So I think that just tells you all you need to know about the fact that he is still in his peak. To everyone who was saying, hey, maybe we're going to have a new best player in baseball by the end of 2021, I do not think it will be by the end of 2021.
And I think, like Aaron, he's such a phenomenal athlete that he's someone who's going to age well as a hitter.
Definitely. It really seems so. I mean, you know, that's why I mentioned the sprint speed is specifically to the point that he's such a great athlete. And you don't look at him and necessarily think that right off the bat, but it's almost that football player kind of build where he has that speed despite being, you know, not skinny like Acuna necessarily. And I just don't see him slowing down anytime soon, which is so exciting to think about.
All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three
is 20. So speaking of Acuna, who I just mentioned, so he has 20 hard hit batted balls so far this season. That's tied for third in the majors. And I just feel like especially the last 2 days have really been the Ronald Acuna show across Major League Baseball. We saw what he did with that infield single in your game on Sunday Night Baseball and then followed it up with a home run on Sunday. And then last night he had a triple scored on a pop-up sac fly. I mean, it was a pop-up, but it's a sac fly in the play-by-play because he scored on it, which is just so hilarious. And I mentioned that about 90th percentile or better in hard hit rate and sprint speed this year. So it's Byron Buxton, Mike Trout, and Ronald Acuna Jr. And I think that's an awesome list. It's great to see all three of those guys there. And I think they're there for slightly different reasons, despite being in those percentile ranges. But that's power and speed. That's what you want to see. And that's what's so electric on the base pass. And I have another list that he's also on, which is players who are 90th percentile or better in hard hit rate and 85th percentile or better in strikeout rate. And that one's Juan Soto, Acuna, and Yuli Gurriel. And that's something else that we like to see in the game these days, these guys not necessarily striking out so much and still hitting for power. So I think everyone was expecting a great year out of him, but it's just awesome that it's coming to pass and that we're seeing it happen just right before our eyes.
Number two
is 27. So Tyler Glasnow last night induced 27 swings and misses, which was the most by a Rays pitcher in any game in the pitch tracking era, which was since 2008. It includes their playoff runs, all of that time. He broke, there were a couple 26s by Blake Snell, 27, now the most by a Rays pitcher. He had 14 strikeouts last night, which was one shy of the franchise record, which is held by Chris Archer and James Shields at 15. But Glasnow, the only other 14 strikeout game was David Price in 2011. So this is what the Rays were hoping for and expecting when they traded Blake Snell and fully made Glasnow their ace, though I would argue he was probably their ace last year too. But he is completely into that echelon now.
Number one
is 119. So Shohei Ohtani last night hit 119 mile an hour exit velocity double, which is just one of those numbers. I mean, we're used to high exit velocities. We're used to these things, but that's a number that we really don't see very much. So the only players with at least one batted ball of a 119 plus mile an hour exit velocity tracked by Statcast, that's since 2015, Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez, and now Shohei Ohtani. And something else that I loved about that game, and it just shows you that high exit velocity definitely helps. The higher the exit velocity, the more likely it is going to be an extra base hit, that's for sure. But he had two doubles last night. The other double, 83.8 miles an hour off the bat, not even a hard hit ball. So it just shows you that he can get it done in any way. But 119 is serious exit velocity territory.
So I want to follow up on Glasnow. As you were talking, I thought of this kind of a fun question, and I want to make absolutely clear that I'm not saying that Tyler Glasnow is better than Gerrit Cole, but I do, as I was watching that last night and as you were just talking now, I was thinking, you know what? Tyler Glasnow is the closest thing that baseball has to Jacob deGrom in terms of that angularity, that dominance with those long levers that he has. What do you think?
Definitely. And I think you see it with the velocity. And again, no disrespect to Cole whatsoever, but Glasnow much more frequently gets into that 99 and 100 mile an hour range than Cole does, which is much more similar to what Jacob deGrom has done. And if you think about the trajectory that Jacob deGrom has gone on, if the Rays can teach Glasnow to add velocity like that, and somehow that seems a little more realistic than Cole necessarily doing that at this point in his career, I mean, he could be, you know, we keep talking about how is Jacob deGrom going to be throwing 103 one day. I think the same thing when I look at Tyler Glasnow, because we've seen that velocity can be learned and can be added later in a career lately. And he seems like another really good candidate for it.
No doubt about it. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets. For Tuesday, first up, we have Melvin Rivera on at Rivera on Melvin. He writes in, love the podcast. I'm a Yankees fan. Does Clint Frazier have a future with the Yankees? I don't think the front office has confidence in him. He's being removed for defense and he got benched after a slow start.
I do think they believe in him. Let's face it, they've hung on to him through other struggles. You know, they identified him when they made a big trade with Andrew Miller with the Cleveland Indians in 2016. And the last couple of years, he's shown real growth. And I know he's not off to a great start, but yeah, I think they'll work it out. The one thing that does happen is when teams struggle offensively, and the Yankees have not hit as well early this season as they have in the past, when teams go through that, guess who gets benched? It's the young guys. Like, they're not going to bench Giancarlo Stanton when they're paying him $30 million a year.
No.
It's the young guys who are going to get changed.
Great point. Next up, we have Adam Yaney at @A_Yaney. He writes in, is extending the first base bag into foul territory the easiest way to alleviate frustration and confusion as well as prevent possible injury in Major League Baseball? I would say yes. What do you say, Buster?
Adam, I totally agree with you. I mean, we've all seen those Little League games where they have those double bags. I think it's safer.
Next up, we have Brandon Raisler. And Brandon, he sent in a handy phonetic spelling of his name, so I appreciate that. At Win for Gwyn, he writes in, Buster, why do so many players bounce around the same division throughout their careers? I assume it's familiarity with the other players' ballparks, but seems like a strange thing to be concerned about with at the elite level. No?
Look, I think what happens is sometimes, and it's a great point, sometimes I think it's coincidence, but in some cases, I think that there are guys who are watched on other teams and they're valued. In other words, someone will say or get a chance to see a player for 10, 15 games during the course of the year. And they'll go, you know what? If we get an opportunity, let's go after that guy. You think of Kurt Suzuki, you know, the longtime catcher who bounced from the Braves to the Nationals. And I think he went back and he's an example. Remember Kelly Johnson, the infielder with the Atlanta Braves? He seemed to bounce back and forth between all the teams in the National League East. You're right. I think that happens. And it's because familiarity is a factor.
Last one for today. We have a question from DMV Don Irvine at Don Irvine. He writes in, are the early season problems for the Nationals shut out three times something to be concerned about, or will they turn it around and wind up with a better record than the Orioles? But
Yeah. And I'm curious to see if your question about the Orioles is serious. Do you think that part serious, Taylor?
I don't know. He's written a kind of earnest question about the Orioles before. So
yeah.
I can't imagine though that this is completely serious.
Yeah. There's no chance that in fact, you know what, Don, I will buy you a dinner certificate if the Orioles win more games than the Nationals this year. You don't have to bet anything on the other side. I will just tell you that if the Orioles win more games than the Nationals, I'm going to find your address. I'm going to send you a dinner certificate because there's no way. Taylor, in fact, I know you would back me up on this because you're an Orioles fan. Yeah. Would you want to pitch in 50%? You and I can buy together.
Yeah, let's do it. We'll DoorDash him some Five Guys or something.
There we go. Absolutely. Yeah. Awesome. So I think that's the case.
All right. Lock it up, Don. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Jess, to Sarah, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on race is something we have to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.